True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is July 12th, right?
Yes.
I'm like, did I say the right month? 2026. It is 9:26 p.m. here in New York, very late, past my bedtime, because we've been recording a couple episodes because I am going on vacation in a few days to North Carolina, going to see my parents. I haven't seen them for a while, so I'm excited to go down. But that means we are having a dark week, the week of the 20th? No, the week of the
27th?
The week after that. The week of the 27th. So there'll be a dark week that week. Just warning you. So if you guys are going to be very, very sad that week, join our Patreon because there are tons of bonus episodes on there that you guys can listen to if you miss us too much. That being said, I'm traveling with a baby for the first time. I already said this on Patreon, so that's why I'm like repeating myself, I feel like. But this episode is going to come out first. So if you guys have any tips for me, I won't have much time by the time this episode comes out, if any, on traveling with a baby, please send them my way. Send them to me either on the True Crime Society Instagram or on my Instagram. I'll try to check my requests because I always forget to check my requests. But I will check. I just want all the tips for traveling, driving for a long distance with the baby. We are splitting it into 2 days and staying in a hotel one night. So any tips you've got, I want to hear them because
the tips might be very nervous.
Yeah, for the ride home too, or even just like being at a beach with a baby, being at a pool with a baby, being in hot weather with a baby, just living, surviving with a baby. Just let me know because I'm very stressed. I have a very long list of things to pack. It's like you have to pack everything they fucking use, everything they touch. How many diapers do I need? How many wipes? I'm just buying new boxes when I get there to have for the week. So
yeah, at least too, you're going somewhere where it's easy to buy things. You don't have to worry too much. You can always just pop out and get something.
Yeah, even like before traveling with a baby, I would always pack for vacations if like there's not a fucking CVS there also. There's not like a pharmacy or a Walmart or a store I could go to. Where I'm always like, if you forget something, you can go to the store. You're not traveling to like a remote island. Like, please get it together. But yeah, I just hope the drive is not an absolute nightmare because he's okay in the car, but we haven't done a very long drive yet. So, and I hope staying in the hotel is okay. So,
and how many days will you have like between the drives?
A week at least. I mean, if we leave Thursday the 16th, I'll probably be coming back on the 25th or the 26th.
Well, that's all right. That's a good gap in between both big drives.
Yeah. I'm mostly nervous about the hotel for some reason, just getting situated there, and hopefully he'll be okay because we're only in one room too. So it's like kind of a drag, but hopefully we'll all be able to sleep. I don't know. It is what it is. We'll survive either way.
The next day will be a new day.
Yeah. I tell myself that a lot in the middle of the night. I'm like, tomorrow's a new day.
Things will be different.
Then they're never different. What's going on with you?
Not too much. Just one thing, I guess, of interest is that I did see the Lion King musical production last week. I've seen it years and years ago. I actually saw it in New York. I think it was the first time I ever went there when I was about 15. And I remember it being great. So it's in Sydney, which is really nice. And it was my daughter's 13th birthday the other day. So we took her to the Lion King. They really, really enjoyed it. It is nice. It's a sweet show. Like when the first part, I have to say, I like teared up a little bit in the first bit where they have like the elephants walking down the aisles. I don't know if it's the same in every theater, but and because where it is in Sydney, it's quite a small theater, which is nice. But like they have all the animals walking down the aisle. So it was really good. It's a great production. I don't know if it's the same there, but here they've been canceling a lot of kind of musicals and stage shows, just I guess because the cost of living, people aren't buying the tickets and it's so expensive to produce. And I guess in Australia too,
there's such a much more of a limited audience. Like we have 25 million people in the whole country. So, you know, they just don't have the people that want to see all these shows all the time. But it was just nice to actually see. I enjoy, you know, supporting theatre and the arts and all that. So it was a really nice show. If you ever get a chance to see it, I would recommend it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw it in Broadway
a
long time ago. I like hardly remember it at this point, but I do remember liking it. I love seeing the show.
I wish we had more here. I know why we don't, but I wish we had more. I've seen Moulin Rouge in Sydney once. Like that's not, I think it might be coming back. I really enjoyed that. So I'd probably go and see that again. But I just wish we had.
Did you see Wicked? I can't remember.
I think yes, years ago I've seen Wicked. I think. Yeah, I did. I'm sure I did see Wicked, but a very, very long time ago, like maybe even close to 10 years ago now. I don't know, but.
Yeah, same, honestly.
Sometimes things get a bit blurry.
Yeah, I'd love to go again, but it's expensive.
It definitely is. And I was glad when she said that she wanted to do that instead of having a party. I'm like, it's so much easier and much more enjoyable for me than having a bunch of 13-year-old girls to chaperone.
I've been thinking, like, I want to have to, like, have birthday parties. Go to birthday parties.
Fun times.
Do people still buy presents? Like, do you bring a present to a birthday party?
Yeah, absolutely. I was reading a thread on Reddit the other day where they said they actually really do not want presents for their kid. And I get that because you just end up with a lot of
that's how I feel
stuff. And so people suggested maybe they could bring a book, which is nice. But then also kids love opening presents. They love getting things. It's hard. It's a hard thing to balance.
Yeah, because even now – Baby Jack, and I always have to call him Baby Jack because people have commented that they like that I call him Baby Jack, and he's just Baby Jack. But he already has so much shit. My house is just overwhelmed with baby stuff, baby toys, and then after a while he gets sick of those ones. He's getting bigger. He needs new toys because his old toys are boring now, and my whole house is just overtaken by baby stuff. So I couldn't imagine, even like Christmas, like you get all this shit and you're like, where am I going to put all this? So birthday party, it's just like another thing of getting tons of presents, which sounds shitty to complain about, like you said. But
trying to find space for everything.
Yeah, I like the books idea, but also, yeah, kids love opening presents. So I get it, but it's easy to feel overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that you have sometimes.
Yeah. And sometimes especially when they're younger and they get invited to a million parties, I just feel like I'm just shelling out money left, right, and center for presents.
How do you know what to get? Like,
it's probably never going to use.
What if you don't know the kid very well? How do you know what to get?
Like generic, like a Play-Doh kit or something always goes down well.
Yeah. Can't wait. Like, you're all getting Amazon gift cards.
Kids would probably love that. They can buy whatever they want then.
Yeah. All right. So we had some new Patreon subscribers this week. We have AJ and Brooke. Woo-hoo! Thanks for joining. Besties for life. XO. You want to do Listener of the Week?
Yep. So Listener of the Week was from a Spotify comment again. It's from KHuff219. And they said, I love you girls and never miss an episode. I'm pretty sure you guys are the nicest people in the podcast world. You're so accommodating and do everything you can to make sure your listeners are happy. I love the timestamp thing only because I'm impatient and want to get right to the case. Thank you for all that you do and don't ever let the negative people get to you. There will always be a-holes in this world no matter what. Keep up the awesome work. So that's really nice. I just feel like that would have taken her at least, you know, let's say 5 minutes of her time to think about something to write it down. It's just so nice that people, you know, appreciate the work of others. I always try and leave comments on other podcasts and things that I listen to as well, because it's nice to know that there are some kind people who appreciate you in the world.
Yeah, and so I know that people actually use and appreciate the timestamp sometimes, because usually we just get people bitching about anything ever.
It is a lot less now that we try and remind people and have the disclaimer and all that, but we did have one comment this week and I'm just like, come on, guys. What else can we do? We've spoon fed it.
It's been 6 years.
Anyway, it's crazy. It definitely is a lot less, which is good.
Someone was also complained that I said, I'm not that interested in serial killers, which I guess honestly is like bad for the brand for me to say. But I just meant, I don't have to explain myself again, but I just meant that it's not as interesting to me as other true crime topics, but I still find it interesting. I just think other topics are more interesting.
Yeah.
And I just usually think they're loser men because that's what they are.
95, probably even more close to 99% of the time. But yeah.
Before we get into the rest of the story, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. IQBar protein bars, IQ mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are the delicious low-sugar brain and body fuel you need to win your day. The Ultimate Sampler Pack is a great way to try all IQBar products and flavors. You get 9 IQ bars, 8 IQ mix sticks, and 4 IQ Joe sticks. All IQBar products are clean label certified and entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial ingredients.
IQ Joe is a mushroom coffee designed for mental clarity and packed with 200 milligrams of natural caffeine. Plus, it comes in 4 different flavors that will totally transform your morning routine. I know we always talk about the weather. It's been cold here. So today I had a delicious vanilla spice IQ Joe coffee. So, so delicious. That one is my absolute favorite flavor. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ Bar's brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. The Ultimate Sampler Pack includes all three. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, including the Ultimate Sampler Pack, plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text CRIME to 64000, text CRIME to 64000. That's CRIME to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Let's get on to it, because otherwise we'll just keep, we're delirious at this point. Yeah. I am anyways, because it's late at night. I'm tired. We recorded 2 episodes. Losing it. Running out of things to say. Okay. So this episode, we are going to be talking about the missing person, Kyle Fleischman, who was 24 years old.
So if you have followed true crime for a little while, you will probably be familiar with this case at least a little bit. For me, it's up there with like the Jesse Ross missing persons case, Brian Schaefer, maybe not quite as infamous as Maura Murray's, but it's definitely a case because it's so old now. It's been going for nearly 20 years that you would likely have heard of. And it's one that has always stuck with me because it happened in a city, not to get ahead of ourselves, but it happened in a city. And it's just one of those things like where do people go? How can these people remain missing and hidden after all this time? So it's a very...
Oh, I hear the kookaburra.
Oh, yeah, that's the kookaburra outside. It's a beautiful sunny day. So I think they usually do that when it's going to rain. So maybe it will rain later.
But, oh, no.
Yeah, so you may be familiar with this one. There are different thoughts about what happened to Kyle. So we'll try and cover them. This has been covered a lot in other podcasts. I've listened to 2 this past week, which I'll reference, but there's a ton of true crime podcasts about this case also if you want to find out some more information after you listen to our one.
Yeah, reminds me a little of, what's his name, Tyler Davis?
It reminds me most, I think, of Brian Schaefer because very, very similar.
Yeah.
Seen on CCTV leaving a bar and then just never seen again.
Yeah. One cold night in November 2007, Kyle Fleischman walked out of a crowded bar in Charlotte, North Carolina, grabbed 2 slices of pizza, made a series of unanswered phone calls, and vanished without a trace. Despite surveillance footage, extensive searches, and nearly 2 decades of investigations, no one has been able to explain what happened after those final moments.
It was a typical night out with friends for 24-year-old Kyle Fleischman. This is where he was last seen, at the Buckhead Saloon in uptown Charlotte. That was sometime Thursday night, early Friday morning, and then he suddenly disappeared.
3 days of worry and no news.
I mean, we're hoping some bizarre thing happened and he's somewhere, but after 3 days.
The last time Kyle Fleischman's parents say they saw their son was on Thursday.
It's my concern is something that's gone on.
They say surveillance video from Buckhead's shows Kyle leaving the restaurant early Friday morning.
And we were halfway home in the car when he text messaged us and said, oh, we're at Buckhead's, come over.
Kyle's parents say he tried to call his sister and friends for a ride, but couldn't get a hold of them and may have called a cab.
He got separated from his friends. He left at 2:20. There's surveillance video of him leaving at 2:20. He didn't have a credit card and he left it in there.
The Fleischmans worry because they say it's unlike Kyle to not keep in touch with them.
Don't know what happened from that point on. Was his credit card?
Since his disappearance, the couple has posted 500 flyers with Kyle's photo across town. Now they're fearing the worst.
I mean, he's totally responsible. He didn't run away or anything. I mean,
reporting from Charlotte, Francis Coe, Carolina's News Connection.
So Kyle was born on September 24th, 1983, to Barbara and Richard, nicknamed Dick, Fleischman. Kyle has at least two siblings, a younger brother who's remained out of the public eye, and a younger sister named Noelle. The Fleischman family moved to Charlotte around 2000 when Dick accepted a position with Fidelity Investments. Kyle graduated from Charlotte Catholic School before earning a business administration degree from Elon University in 2006. So this information about Kyle is from Reddit. It says, Kyle was 6 feet tall, athletic, muscular build, veneer teeth, described as having a very positive, outgoing personality, helpful, volunteered with kids in need. Kyle was single and recently started a new job with Maxim, which is a healthcare recruitment consultancy in South Park. Maxim was also near his dad's office at Fidelity. Kyle had recently purchased a new condo in South Charlotte, approximately 8 miles from Uptown. He lived there with two male roommates, one being his friend Bruce.
Yeah, so the two of the podcasts I've listened to this week, The Vanished did one, which I think is older, and they interview Kyle's dad, Dick, a lot in that one. The other one is the Unfound podcast, where they interview a woman who has followed the case a lot, and basically, so they, like, the Unfound podcast especially is super long. It's maybe like an hour and a half at least long. So they go into a lot of detail about this. Kyle's roommates were apparently soccer players, but yeah, he had just bought this brand new condo. He seemed to have everything going for him, had a great job, was very close to his family, just everything going for him. There was no reasoning that he would have walked away from his life, which is one of the theories that we'll get into.
Kyle was a friendly, caring, and trusting person. He made friends easily. Barbara, his mother, was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2007, and Kyle told her they would beat it together. Barbara was scheduled to undergo surgery in November 2007, and Kyle decided that he wanted to treat his mother to a night out to lift her spirits. On Thursday, November 8th, 2007, Kyle treated her to a Dane Cook comedy show. Dane performed his Rough Around the Edges tour at the Charlotte Bobcats Arena, which is now known as the Spectrum Center, in Charlotte. And Noelle also attended the show with Barbara, and the mother and daughter were seated together. So it's confusing, but Kyle also attended the show, but with a group of his friends, and sat separately from his mother and sister, but they were all there.
Yeah.
Kyle attended with his best friend, Dan Scagnelli, Dan's wife, Christina, a friend, Dom, and Dom's girlfriend. Prior to the show, Kyle drove his car to Dan's house in Dilworth and left the vehicle there. The group got in a cab and had drinks and dinner uptown before the show. After the show finished, Kyle invited his mother to come for drinks, but she declined and headed home with Noelle. Kyle and his friends walked around 5 to 6 minutes from the venue to the Buckhead Saloon, and they arrived there around 10 to 10:30 p.m.
So one of the other podcasts I listened to, I believe it was The Vanished, they do interview Dan, the friend who was with Kyle that night. And it was obviously, I think they interviewed him in the early like 2020s, maybe 2021. So it's been a long time since Kyle disappeared. So his memory was a little bit hazy, but he does say that he believes they went to that bar because it was close. That was the only reason they went there. They'd never been there before or hadn't been there often. So it wasn't like this was a favorite bar of theirs. They just went there because of its proximity to the stadium where they, the arena where they watched Dane Cook.
Dane Cook is like such a throwback too. It's crazy.
Is he still a thing? I haven't heard of anything about him.
I don't know. I know that he got like crazy, maybe not plastic surgery, but like Botox or fillers or something last I saw. But yeah, big throwback with that. So the Buckhead Saloon was now permanently closed, but this is a 2008 review. It says, Buckhead is Buckhead. It's a college bar. So if you're in the mood for a college bar, then it's the right place for you. If you're not, then you should stay away. Another review said, it's kind of meat markety, like Cannes and a few other places around Charlotte. Since they're catering to the young and horny crowd, they also offer good deals on a few college-friendly nights. So if you can stand the ick factor, you can drink pretty cheap. Kyle and his friends purchased drinks. They ran into a group of people who they had a mutual friend with, and Kyle began chatting with some women within the larger group. According to a detailed timeline of the case from Reddit, around midnight, Dom and his girlfriend left the bar, and then soon after, around 12:15 to 12:30, Dan closed his bar tab and told Kyle that he was leaving. So this was now the early morning hours of Friday. Most of the group probably had work later that day.
Yeah, Dan says in one interview he didn't go to work that day. I don't know if that was planned or not, or maybe, like, I don't know, if they had been drinking, just speculating, maybe he was hungover and didn't go to work, but he didn't. But I know that Kyle was due to go to work later on that day.
Dan said that Kyle was talking to the group of women. He said he wanted to stay and he would get a cab to Dan's later to pick up his car. Dan said that Kyle had been drinking beer and had a few shots, but that he was only moderately buzzed. So basically just saying he wasn't like wasted. Between 1 to 2 a.m., Kyle was chatting and dancing with one female. And there's actually a CCTV still of them. And it's pretty blurry, but it's there.
Yeah, they look like very close. It looks like she might be talking to him and she's a little, either vice versa. It looks like they're talking to each other and they're kind of leaning in. So obviously it was loud.
She's like whispering in his ear.
Yeah, speaking right into his ear. Like, I feel like it does indicate that they were both compliant in this. Like, he wasn't pushing himself on her. It doesn't look like they were just chatting and hanging out, it seems, as a, you know, having a good time.
Yeah. Around this time, there was a minor altercation that allegedly occurred between Kyle and the female's boyfriend or male friends. This is believed to have happened because Kyle was being somewhat flirty with her. The woman ended up leaving the bar at 2:17 a.m., and it appears that Kyle decided to wrap things up around that time as well. Around 2:19, he was seen on CCTV leaving the bar. He left his jacket at the bar with his bank cards in the pocket. It's believed he had his wallet and some cash, which is reported to have been about $6, and his keys with him. And to note, of course, the weather was very cold on this night. The high was 62 degrees Fahrenheit or 17 degrees Celsius. The low was 34 degrees Fahrenheit or 1 degree Celsius.
So just, yeah, two things to quickly add. I've read some reports that he may have had up to $9 or $10. So either way, he had like under $10
with him. Not a lot of
him.
Cash.
No. But, and then to leave the bar without your jacket at, when it would have, even if it wasn't 1 degree by that point, it might have only been, you know, 2 degrees or, you know, just above 35 or whatever Fahrenheit. It would have been absolutely freezing to leave a bar and not have your jacket. You would have been freezing.
Yeah. Kyle was seen on CCTV at 2:20 a.m. walking east on College Street. At 2:20 to 2:42 a.m., Kyle was seen alone at Field Pizza. He purchased two slices and used the restroom. Kyle's friends have said he often went to Fuel after a night out. The employee who served Kyle claims to have a photographic memory and said that Kyle ordered two everything or extreme slices.
Just to add another interjection, because I've listened to all these podcasts and they're fresh in my mind. So Kyle's dad said that he had access to Kyle's bank account. Kyle had originally added him and then never removed him. So that's how they figured out that he likely had this $9 or $10. And that is what the pizza likely would have cost as well. So, you know, just to clarify, he didn't have hundreds of dollars of cash on him. That would have made him maybe a target for robbery. This pizza would have used up the cash that he likely had on him.
Yeah. After he left Fuel Pizza, Kyle was never seen again. He began making phone calls from 2:42. He made 8 phone calls. He tried to call his dad, his roommate, his sister, and Daniel. All of the calls were very short, under 10 seconds long, and he didn't leave any voicemails. So this is a timeline of the calls from Reddit. At 2:42 a.m., Kyle called the business that he went to earlier in the night, but no answer, assuming that's the bar that he left his.
Well, I don't know. Like, I've never really seen it being clarified, and there's a lot of speculation about this, and now it's 20 years later, like, things have kind of gotten lost and changed over the years, but it just says a business he went to earlier in the night. So, yeah, I guess it could be the bar.
I'd imagine it'd be that because he left his jacket and bank card there. So. This is probably when he realized. At 2:42 a.m., he then called his own voicemail. From 2:42 to 2:57, he called his dad, called Dick 3 times during this period with no answer. And Dick says Kyle called his cell and his work office line. Kyle's dad was in Raleigh staying at a hotel for work that evening. Then at 3 a.m., Kyle called his sister again, no answer. From 3 to 3:28, no one really knows what was going on during that time. At 3:28 a.m., Kyle calls his friend Dan, which was unanswered, and it was 4 seconds long. At 3:29 a.m., he called Bruce, his roommate. It was unanswered and lasted 6 seconds. So it's speculated that Kyle's phone died or was turned off around 4 a.m.
So one thing I have seen mentioned in a lot, obviously this was 2007, Kyle apparently had a flip phone. And you know, back then, texting kind of pre-smartphone was a pain. You had to press the button multiple times. And they even speculated that maybe because he was trying to call his dad and Dan, like in some of those old flip phones, for example, if you held down the number one, it would be like a quick dial to your dad or whatever. So maybe he was trying to call Dan about his car. And because he was maybe intoxicated, like he kept calling the wrong person. They were also speculating that he called his sister to maybe try and get her to pick up the car. But he didn't leave any voicemails for any of these people, so we don't really know what he was trying to do.
Yeah. It's weird he didn't leave a voicemail under these circumstances. Like, back then it was much more common to leave voicemails.
Yeah.
So when Dan woke up on November 9th, he was alarmed to discover that Kyle's car was still at his house. He tried to call him and then the call went to voicemail. When Kyle didn't get back to Dan, Dan called his work that afternoon and was told that Kyle had not shown up. Dan then contacted Kyle's family in the early evening of November 9th to let them know that he hasn't been able to get in touch with his friend. A missing person report was then filed for Kyle. Police officers searched alleys, streets, parking garages, wooded areas, and construction sites near where Kyle was last seen. They also interviewed bar employees and cab drivers in the hope of finding out more information. When authorities looked into Kyle's cell phone records, they found that after he left Fuel Pizza, the activity on the phone centered around the uptown Charlotte area. As Kyle kept calling people, the ping shifted northeast from uptown towards North Davidson Street, also known as the No-Da area. Before we get into the rest of the episode, we have a quick word from our sponsor, Nutrafol. Summer is full of vacations, weekend getaways, and spending more time outdoors. And when you're packing for a trip, the last thing you want to be worrying about is your hair. That's one reason I've loved having Nutrafol as part of my routine. It's helped me feel more confident about my hair, whether I'm headed to the beach, exploring a new city, or just enjoying a long weekend away. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF-certified for sport, and clinically tested.
Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20% and get added perks to support your hair health journey. Let your hair be one less thing to worry about. See visibly thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair in 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code TCS. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code TCS.
Investigators believe this shows that Kyle left the busy bar district and headed towards a more industrial or residential area. The final ping was said to have come around 3:30 to 4 a.m. in the area near Cordelia Park, which is around 2 miles from the uptown area where Kyle was previously, and it places him in an area that was, at the time, relatively isolated and higher crime. The family hired a private investigator to look into the case, and this private investigator spoke to a cab driver who said he saw a man matching Kyle's description walking alone on North Davidson Street around 3:25 a.m. on November 9th. He said the man seemed intoxicated or drunk, but according to reports, the PI was doubtful that the sighting was actually Kyle. This PI personally collected Kyle's jacket and debit card from the Buckhead Saloon after Kyle had vanished. Bloodhounds and tracking dogs were brought into the search shortly after Kyle disappeared, and it's believed that the dogs picked up Kyle's scent near Fuel Pizza and tracked his movements up North Davidson Street. The scent was said to have become weak and eventually disappeared near the Cordelia Park area. So this is a little bit of info about the Cordelia Park area from Reddit. It says, in 2007, Cordelia Park was known as a hotspot for gangs and drug dealers. Many would describe No-Da as a sketchy part of town back in 2007. So this area was in the opposite direction to where Kyle should have been headed. He didn't know anyone in that area and didn't live in the area himself, so there's really no reason for him to have been going there. Some articles report that cadaver dogs were used in the search for Kyle. This is from an article that says, the next day, the handlers took the dogs back and picked up where they had left off. The dogs tracked Kyle's scent past the park and into a construction area about 200 yards away. The handler claimed when they got close to the construction site, she could smell death. She said it was a very strong scent of a dead animal or possibly a human. She took the dogs all over the site to try to track down the source of the smell, but they were unsuccessful. Both dogs took the same path, and at the construction site, they brought in more dogs to help search the large area, but found nothing. Residents of the area also complained about the foul odor that smelled like a large dead animal, but nothing was done about it.
So I have read a bunch of varying reports about this. I don't think it's disputed that dogs were used. Some reports do say they were cadaver dogs and others specifically say they were not cadaver dogs. I don't know if it really matters because there seems to have been this scent picked up that dropped off near the Cordelia Park area. But I just wanted to add that in because you may have read something either way, and I definitely have. So now with the passage of time, I'm not entirely sure what's correct, but some articles really, really dispute that there were ever cadaver dogs used.
So Daniel created a Facebook group to help in the search for Kyle, and over 50,000 people joined in a short amount of time. But of course, Facebook did eventually purge the group, so the numbers are much smaller now.
Yeah, so I had a look at the group. It is still active as such, but when I say active, I mean it just exists. There aren't really many updates. They mostly, like, the most recent posts are about kind of other missing people in the area and things like that. So there's about 5,000 or 6,000 people in the group now. It does still exist. But at the time, this was kind of the start of social media interest in missing people in true crime cases. So it really, really got some traction at the time. In 2009, a federal judge ordered a search warrant for the construction area, for the construction site in the area where Kyle was last seen. And this is on 16th and North Davidson Street. This location is now known as the Edgeline Flats. Interestingly, the ATF were linked to the case at the time, and they usually investigate cases that involve drugs, gang, or gun violence. So people were questioning, why are they involved in Kyle's case? They're not, you know, it's not saying that he was involved in those things, but maybe whatever happened to him happened due to those things. The judge sealed those documents to the public, so we don't know really much what was found, if anything, during that time. In 2011, Dick spoke to WCNC.com, and he said that by that point, law enforcement had not contacted him about the case since 2009. He gave an interview where he said, "I don't know if the pain will be less or worse. I do spend substantial frustration over not knowing what happened. It's upsetting to talk about, but I know my son would do the same for me and he would never give up." He also spoke about the multiple phone calls that Kyle made. He said, "I believe he was looking for a ride. Oh, how I wish he just would have gone to a hotel." Dick has said that he was worried at that point about the safety of his family, as he believed that Kyle had been murdered and his body had been dumped. He said the family had moved homes and he wouldn't say where they were living, and that he believes Kyle was buried near the construction site that we mentioned. Kyle's parents spoke to the media again. They've spoken over the years. I've just picked out a few points. So this time was in 2019. His mother, Barbara, thankfully did recover from her cancer diagnosis. And in 2019, she said, "It's true what they say about time. I like to think of the good things, think of the life, not the death, mostly the good things." Kyle's father, Dick, has had a tougher time, and he said, "My brain tends to go towards, did we miss anything? I just think he was a victim of robbery. It got bad and he took his life. And they took his life." He also said, 3 years later, a woman contacted the police. She goes, "Well, I called the police. There was a horrible stench here and I think something's deceased here. There are condos now. We tend to believe he's buried under there. At the time, there was open dirt because they were digging for the pipes." So Dick has been very vocal in that. Over the years, he's been vocal in that that is what he believes happened to Kyle. In the Vanish podcast, he basically says that Kyle is deceased. He speaks about how, I think he says something like 80% of marriages end in divorce when a child dies, and that how he and Barbara worked to make sure that didn't happen, and he knew Kyle wouldn't have wanted that to happen. So he does refer to Kyle as deceased. Barbara, his mother, said, "I think we know, but it's never going to be prosecuted or anything like that. We know what our PIs have found out and the police to a lesser extent, but nothing provable." She went on to say, "I wonder what he'd be doing. I see all of his friends getting married and having children, and I assume he would have been doing that too, and that would have been wonderful." The detective in the case, John Tuttle, has spoken, and he said, "It's a true missing persons case. We really don't know what happened." And Barbara said, "I hate to say it, it's hard to remember the sound of his voice, and sometimes it's hard it's not there, but that's the gift of time." Dick said, "There's never a day I don't think about him." And so there's a clip here from last year's anniversary which will pop in. So they are still talking. His parents have dropped off, I guess, the radar a little bit in terms of speaking about the case, and it has now been 20 years. We've mentioned in the past, life does move on no matter, even if we don't want it to, life does move on. they would have to protect their own peace. I don't blame them. You know, there isn't really anything else to investigate from their end, it seems. They believe they know what happened to Kyle. He's buried in this certain area and they will likely never have closure or never find his remains just because he's basically buried in a construction site, according to them. So that is it in terms of the actual case. This case is still discussed discussed in many places online today. In terms of theories about what happened to Kyle, the most common theory is that this was some type of random robbery gone wrong. So we know that Kyle was probably intoxicated, even though Dan said he was just moderately buzzed. He was drunk enough to leave his jacket behind and his card. So he was alone. Maybe, you know, he was trying to walk home. He walked into this less populated area and was an easier target. Maybe someone thought he had money and he was killed during a robbery and his body was dumped in the construction site and then it was covered up with concrete. I guess another theory is that he had some type of fall at the construction site and died and was found the next day. There are rumors that construction workers did come across his body and just covered him up because they didn't want to deal with finding a body on a construction site.
What? Why would they do that?
I don't know. Like, wouldn't you just call the police? I feel like that's unlikely. For me, if it was something at the construction site, he was placed there and probably obstructed from view, so the workers may not have realized and covered him with concrete. The other theory.
I can't imagine a world where like construction workers are just like, I'm not dealing with this. Just cover him up with some concrete.
I know. Like, imagine So this happened on a Thursday, Friday morning now by the time he left the bar. So imagine when they get to work that day, they find a body. Like, would your first reaction really be, let's just cover it up? We can't be bothered to deal with this. One of the other theories that is discussed is voluntary disappearance. Obviously, we don't know what was going on at the time. Maybe he was having some mental health struggles or other struggles, but there is absolutely no suggestion of any of that. He seemed to have a pretty good life. He had a good job. He just bought a condo. He loved his family. You know, obviously, people have stresses. Yeah. We never know what goes on below the surface, but I just feel like this is an unlikely one for me, especially now, 20 years later, to have no evidence of that.
It's a no from me.
Another theory is that was he the victim of a serial killer? A week before Kyle disappeared, another male did go missing from a bar/club. That was Justin Gaines. He went missing from Georgia, though, so a separate state. And then in the end, when I've read more about Justin's case, I feel like his acquaintances know more than what they are saying about what happened to him. He's still missing as well, but I think the main correlation between him and Kyle is that they both went missing under similar circumstances after leaving the nightclub, and that's where it ends. And the same time, like 1 week apart.
You can say that about a lot of cases.
Yeah, exactly. And men, I don't even want to generalize, but you know, people who are young, they go out to bars, they go out to clubs. It's not unusual that something happens to someone after they've been drinking or intoxicated. So maybe that's why there's that extra correlation. Obviously, the smiley face killer theory is always mentioned. There are no huge bodies of water in this case that he likely could have been dumped in and to have never been found 20 years later. I feel like that's also a no for me in this case. The other two kind of questions and theories that come up is that when we mentioned that Kyle's scent was tracked to Cordelia Park. One question that is raised is, did Kyle actually walk there, or was he maybe taken there in a car? Someone kind of stopped, robbed him, took him in the car to the area and dumped him. The PI has said that he disputes the sighting that the taxi driver said that he had of Kyle was actually legitimate. So maybe that's the theory, that he was taken to the park and dumped. He didn't walk that whole way there. One thing I have heard Dick Flashman talk a lot about is he has raised questions about if the Fuel Pizza employees were involved. Obviously, they saw Kyle. I don't think there's any dispute that he actually purchased the pizza, but Dick raised the fact that some of them now have criminal records, some of them have been in prison, so maybe they thought Kyle had more money than he did. They knew he was intoxicated. They followed him from the pizza
place. They also said he went there all the time, though.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Would you really think?
So I feel like he'd be friendly with them if he goes there all the time.
Yeah. And it's not like he was flashing wads of cash. He literally had $10, if that. No. So he would have got his cash out and paid. Like, Dick Flashman seems To think that that is maybe a very plausible theory. Obviously, he knows, I'm assuming, the most about this case, more about this case than anyone, but it just does seem a little bit unlikely to me that these random pizza shop employees would follow Kyle and take his life, even if they robbed him after. Would they really bother murdering and then dumping his body in a construction site?
It seems like no.
So the other thing is I did pick out, there's a, as I mentioned, a lot of discussion online. I did pick out some points just that I found were interesting. So Dan, who was out with Kyle at the time, said that it wasn't too unusual that he left his card and jacket at a bar. He said that Kyle has actually done this before. He'd left his card at a bar at least once before. And Dan said that he could remember only a single time where Kyle got so drunk that he didn't know where he was. So interesting point.
I feel like it's not that weird to leave your card at a bar. Like, me and Mike have both done that. Even that, like, you don't even have to be like wasted to do that. You can just kind of forget that you like had a tab open, or if like for some reason you're like, oh shit, I gotta go, you just kind of forget.
I also don't think it's that weird if he and you know,
he might have been flustered by the drama with like the girl.
Yeah, that's what I was
going
to say. Maybe he was trying to catch up with the girl and he just wanted to get out of there. And by the time he got out, he realized that he'd left his jacket. And then, you know, even in one of the podcasts I listened to, they make a valid point. If you're shutting up the bar, some guy comes back and bangs on the door, you're not going to let him in. If the phone's ringing, you're not going to answer it because you want to get home and get out of there. So I just feel like all of this could be explained in terms of if he did try and call the bar, why he couldn't go back and get his jacket. I feel like none of that is really super suspicious.
Yeah.
So this is just some more information about his phone. The person said the calls to his dad, Dick, are the most perplexing. He could have had bad service. He also had a T9 flip phone. His dad said that he believes Kyle could have pressed 1 or whatever number Kyle had associated with his dad's kind of quick dial, and Kyle could have been holding down on the wrong numbers trying to call the wrong number. So I agree that could explain a lot of the calls.
It's interesting to me that they think it's weird that he called his dad, whereas like, I didn't think that was weird at all. Is it just
weird for him to be calling his dad?
If I was stranded, it seems like he was stranded, needed a ride. It was cold out. He had no money. He had no jacket and he needed like some help. I would call my parents.
Yeah. I think the main thing that people find weird about calling the dad is that he called the house, the business and the dad's cell phone. But maybe they were saying like maybe he had them listed separately, like dad work, dad home. So he wasn't quite sure which ones he was calling. I don't know. I just feel like I also don't think it's weird. I don't think it's weird he called his sister. I don't think it's weird he called Dan. All of these people were people who maybe could have helped him to get his car. Yeah, I agree. This is a comment I read about the area that he disappeared in. This person said, I live in the area of Plaza Midwood neighborhood of Charlotte and I've been to Fuel Pizza where he was last seen. I've been there multiple times. Even now, while a lot of the area has been gentrified, I would never walk alone there at night. Even 16 years later and post-gentrification, it is easy to take a wrong turn and end up in a bad situation. Specifically in the Noda Plaza Belmont area, it sounds like he was moving towards. There is still a fairly high crime rate and I wouldn't be surprised in the least if he ran into foul play. This one I take with a grain of salt because I'm like, did this really happen? But this is just an interesting comment about, and it specifically mentions the Buckhead Saloon. This person said, one night around the same time that Kyle disappeared, after too many beers, I left the Buckhead Saloon alone. I was oblivious to my surroundings, but after walking a few blocks, a cop grabbed me and said, do you not see those people following you? He put me in a cab and sent me home. Didn't think much about it until I saw where Kyle disappeared. And to this day, I'm convinced there was a group of people preying on young drunk kids to come out of that bar alone. Don't know. I feel like interesting maybe. This is another comment about the area. I would say at least twice a week, my roommates and I would walk from our house to Fitzgerald's, which was what it became after it was Buckhead Saloon, either for some casual beers or a pre-game before a Hornets game. The walk isn't short, but it's not super long. Very easy to do, although we never walked it alone and we always had at least two of us walking together. So this is someone's theory, which they have spent a lot of time typing out. I guess it is a little bit plausible and I'll just summarize it and I'll put the whole thing on the blog if you want to read it. But basically, this person says that after Kyle's friends left the bar, Kyle proceeded to drink a lot more and become more intoxicated because, as we mentioned, Dan said that he was only moderately buzzed. He was speaking to the girl left. He left the bar, maybe trying to catch up with the girl, didn't even worry about his jacket or his card. And then basically as he's walking, he strikes up a conversation with the guys at Fuel. One of them is said to have lived in the Noda area. And then it goes on, they think that Kyle was likely offered drugs, maybe cocaine, and this is why the workers remember him so well, because, you know, this guy said he had a photographic... The guy said he had a photographic memory and remembered Kyle. Would he really remember every single part customer? So they're kind of insinuating that this person has more of a reason to remember Kyle apart
from... But if he went there often, like they said.
Yeah. So then it just goes on to talk about, you know, basically, they're not going to let, they tried to rob him, realized he didn't have anything. And they said they aren't going to let him just walk after they tried to rob him. So they kill him and take his body. I just feel like, again, a reach.
Yeah.
So I really, I feel like Dick Flashman's theory is probably correct. I do think that Kyle is likely buried in that area. And it would just be so hard to find anything after this time because mounds and mounds of concrete have now been poured. It's now an apartment complex. Unless for some reason it's demolished, I just feel like they won't be able to likely find any remains of Kyle. I guess there are the other options if, you know, he did go voluntarily or does end up being somewhere else. But I do feel like a lot of things, the dogs, the scent, him being maybe in that area, the phone pings, all of those things point to something happening to him in that area.
It is pretty crazy though that they like had a missing person and then everyone's like, it smells like something big is dead. And everyone's just like,
Yeah. Oh, well, too bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like either the most likely scenarios are he was wandering around, walked into like a bad area and something had happened to him, like foul play of some sort, just because of where he was walking. Or he was wandering around without his jacket. It's very cold out. Maybe he did go to the construction site and like kind of hide up somewhere.
Tried to get warm, yeah.
Yeah, and froze to death. And then being a construction site, there's always just stuff moving around and maybe his body was covered somehow.
Yeah, it is super sad. I just now, like next year will be 20 years since he went missing. Yeah, I just, it's unbelievable. And I know this kind of happened in a time pre-most CCTV, pre-phone technology improving and increasing, so maybe that has hindered the investigation. But 20 years and no trace is crazy.
Yeah, it's always sad when the family is really never probably going to get an answer. Hopefully one day they do somehow, but it just has to be so hard to always wonder what happened.
So Kyle, as of the time of recording, July 2026, would now be 42 years old. He went missing when he was 24. He was 6 foot and 180 pounds at the time, and he was last seen wearing a black short-sleeved T-shirt, jeans, and black dress shoes, and he's described as a white male with brown hair and green eyes. So, yeah, I feel unlikely that we will hear any more updates, but this is one that's always stuck with me, and we've had a few requests to cover it. So an interesting case. Yeah, just sad for the family that they may not ever have any answers.
Yeah, it must be so weird to like see that the complex or whatever and be like, I know he's there.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's true or not, that's what they feel is true. Yeah.
And I'm sure they have, you know, tons of evidence that they haven't made public and to have to back up that theory. So yeah, very sad.
But that is it for this episode. Olivia was just saying, I doubt we'll be hearing an update, but if we do somehow, we'll definitely post about it. As always, everything will be on the blog at truecrimesocietyblog.com. Check us out on Patreon if you want some extra content from us. We do weekly bonus episodes and all the episodes are ad-free. Plus, we have some chats on there. Olivia has her little active book club chat. Mm-hmm. Everyone likes to talk about the books they're reading. We have a bunch of other things going on there too. And we do an earlier release of the main episode. Plus with the dark week coming up, there's like over, I have no idea what the number is, over 100 something bonus episodes.
I feel like it must be nearly at 150, close enough. Yeah, anyway.
There's a lot of bonus episodes. Yeah. So if you need a binge, join the Patreon and check out the whole collection of bonus episodes that we have on there. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at True Crime Society. We're always posting cases and updates on there. If you want to see what we're up to, mine is Steph_Sum_, Olivia's TCS Olivia. Leave us some Spotify comments. And if you could share to your Instagram stories, listening to the podcast, we love to see what you guys are doing while you listen to the podcast. We love resharing. So it's a great way to help us get the word out. So we always appreciate that. But that is it. It is 10:15 p.m. I'm tired. I need to go to bed because baby Jack will be waking probably at
if I'm lucky, 5 a.m. If I'm not lucky, he'll be waking up at like 12, 2, 4. So we'll see how the night goes, but I must get to bed. So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out. Bye.
See ya.